Coming up next on Tech News Today, Baidu and NVIDIA are partnering up on AI and autonomous vehicle technology. Snapchat is copying some of Instagram's features for a change. Nokia and Xiaomi are getting pat and cozy with one another. Flying cars are getting realer by the day, and we take a look at a growing pattern of sexual harassment in Silicon Valley VC industry. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1803, recorded Wednesday, July 5th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Grasshopper. Stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit. Welcome. Is that our fireworks simulation?
Yes, I was doing a few illegal fireworks, setting them off after the 4th of July, the kind that shoot up in the sky, and they're a little too loud to be legitimate.
Yeah. We still love America.
Yeah.
This is Tech News Today.
Exactly.
Brian. I'm Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. We're not going to talk about fireworks today. Normally we would the day after 4th of July. Mm-hmm. Instead, we're going to talk about technology.
Let's do it. Lots of announcements coming out of the Baidu Create conference this week in Beijing. The biggest among them is the list of partners from the company's Apollo self-driving platform designed to take on Waymo and perhaps also Uber. Baidu is calling it an autonomous driving alliance. It includes Ford, Daimler, Intel, NVIDIA, TomTom, 12 Chinese automakers, universities, suppliers, startups, and local governments. Like Waymo, Silicon Valley and Beijing-based Baidu wants to develop the technology and the AI to power self-driving cars, not to create the cars themselves. Baidu will have access to the driving data from all 50 companies, so that will definitely give them a competitive advantage. And they'll get, you know, different things than driving data from universities. But they're going to get something from all these people in the alliance. And Baidu said that they will be positioned, that China is positioned to be the leader in self-driving cars in 3 to 5 years.
And actually Baidu CEO Qi Lu, or is it Qi Lu? I'm sorry, I'm probably mispronouncing your name in one of those two, I would have to be, called the Apollo platform the Android of the autonomous driving industry, but more open and powerful. But basically interpreting that essentially means that the data and the services that come with the platform, so they're creating the platform and all this extra stuff would make it worth making it widely available in the way that they're doing. It's a little bit more of an open approach, different from what some of the other companies are doing. And I think in effect, get as many people onto the platform so they're creating all this valuable information that they can then benefit from.
Mm-hmm. It's obviously already working. A U.S. company called Autonomous Stuff.
I don't know. Let's create a company. What are we going to create? Autonomous things? That's not going to work. Autonomous stuff, though.
Autonomous stuff. They created two cars that they drove with the Baidu, with the Apollo platform.
Yeah.
And they drove them around. I mean, no one drove them around.
Right.
They raced
They were driven around.
Yeah, the robots drove them around to show them off at the conference today. It is exciting.
Yeah, well, and they're also, this wasn't the only announcement to come out of this. It really kind of detailed kind of a broader partnership in AI in general. So obviously there's kind of the autonomous vehicle aspect of this. They're also, Baidu will also be using NVIDIA's Volta GPUs for Baidu Cloud. NVIDIA is going to work with Baidu on open source deep learning frameworks, something called Paddle. And then Baidu's Dewar OS is going to be coming to the NVIDIA Shield TV, which is basically Baidu's virtual assistant, which the NVIDIA Shield TV running Android TV already has Google's assistant on there. So it's going to be doing double duty. No, never mind. Anyways, you know what I mean.
I get where you're going with
that. Sorry. I'm sorry I ended with a horrible dad joke, but I try my best. That's all I got.
Yeah.
Our dad jokes. Snapchat is updating its app today with a few cool features, including backdrops that actually separates you from the background and places imagery behind you after doing a little bit of light masking of the image with on-screen tools. That actually reminded me a lot of what you can do in Photoshop, where you mask the foreground image and everything behind you goes away, and then you can replace that. You can find that in all sorts of image editing software. Also, voice filters have apparently been a part of some of the filters that are now being broken out to allow you, yes, you, Megan, to change your voice to a chipmunk after the fact, if you so choose, or however you shot a video of.
Right, because I do use those voice filters, but previously they were, you had to have a bunny ears and the voice filter. You couldn't just put voice filter on your own un-Snapchat filtered face. But now the whole world is open to me. I mean, I don't know if you can play video, but you could see an example of this science.
Playing the audio in that example right there?
It was playing it, but that's okay.
It was muted.
It's like this. It's like I'd be talking just like this, and then all of a sudden, I'd be talking just like this. Snapchat.
See, you don't even need a filter. You know how to do it already.
I actually need a filter for like these lines and stuff. I like how Snapchat like erases those.
They put a hat on you.
Yes, they put a hat on me. I, as you know, love Snapchat. I did a lot of serious journalism today working, I attached links.
Right, with Paperclip, which I actually didn't mention. Allows you to attach links. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
I
interrupted you. I got so excited.
That's okay. I know. You're really excited about attaching links to things.
I did. Yeah, you can attach links, which of course opens up all kinds of, that's the reason why Instagram and Snapchat left out links is because links is where malware comes and phishing attacks and stuff like this. But they're doing some kind of magic to keep that out, keep malware out of the
Snapchat. They're giving you a little bit of a preview, apparently, next to the up arrow down at the bottom. You can get a preview of the link. And then if you choose, based on that preview, you can choose to go through, and they're going to do some scanning around scams, malware, dangerous content, and then also rely on community reporting from that regard. But apparently Instagram, by the way, in kind of a reversal of sorts, we're so used to Instagram copying Snapchat. Instagram has allowed verified posts or profiles rather to add links to their stories for a while now. So is this Snapchat like copying Instagram features?
Yeah, they're all copying each other.
Exactly.
It is. It's the race to the best bunny ears. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, it's what was more. See, as you can see, Brian now pulled up the work I did today. Erased that background,
that
picture of my dog.
Beautiful.
And
that is
added,
seamless.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine that Snapchat did that in 2 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem. Like when you're drawing with your finger, you end up like, by the way, you could always like take out your face and make face stickers. I've showed that off before, like, and just do several pictures of your face on there. But the more important Snapchat news, I think we missed it, was last week they announced this feature called Snap Map, which then puts Snap Map where you can share your location with everyone. I guess The Verge reported that it's a privacy threat, but I'm seeing this more on like the NBC News at 7 kind of news where it's like, guess what your children are up to? You'll never believe it. They're doing the most dangerous things, when the 6 o'clock news, which is designed to freak parents out. So I will calm you down a little bit. This is a really hard feature to turn on. It is opt-in, but it's hard to turn on. Even a Snapchat expert like myself had a hard time, and I use that facetiously. You have to open the camera and you have to then zoom out. Like there's nowhere where there's directions to do that. You zoom out like you're pinching and zooming in, or zoom in, I guess. You're zooming in on a picture, and then it opens a map, and then you go through this thing where you have to turn it on, and then it shares your location. And it shares your location only when you are using the app, which for many teenagers is literally all the time. Yeah. So all I have to say, I'm not going to frighten or scare the pants off you if you have a child using Snapchat. I would just say if you have a child using Snapchat, now's a good opportunity to talk to them about sharing their location and the dangers of that. And, this isn't the first app that lets you share your location, Google's tracking your location. But I can understand it's a good time to also talk about who are your friends on Snapchat? Who's following you? Like, because you and I's definition of who a friend is very different from a teenager's definition of a friend. Like for them, it's like someone they know in real life who is their cousin's soccer coach's brother's, sister that just got out of jail. So
Right. And in some cases, actually, I don't know if this translates to Snapchat, but I know it did when, you know, when Facebook was still cool, in air quotes. I say that facetiously, where the more friends you had, the, you know, you were always striving to have more friends. And is Snapchat used in the same way, or is Snapchat, I mean, among, like, I mean, you can probably only use your kids as kind of the younger set to as examples, but are they constantly trying to open that up to where a feature like that would be dangerous, or do they keep it relatively narrow?
That's a good question. I mean, it's easier to tell on a on something like Instagram, which is more open.
Yeah.
Like, so much of Snapchat is really under wraps. Yeah. Like, you cannot... It's the worst kind. I've said this before, but it's the worst kind. Because if your child does something and then it is, you know, screenshotted, it could go everywhere. So, like,
sure.
But at the same time, there's so much of it that is invisible that disappears right away. So you're not getting the whole story, like, why you have to talk to your kids. I know it's hard, easier said than done, but... But yeah, I think there is, it's not so much as like so many followers, so many likes. I think this generation is moving a little bit away from that, but it is a lot of people. And again, like you said, I'm only using my kids, and I'm sure it's different in places that aren't like a small town like Petaluma, where a lot of people do know each other. You
sure,
know, so.
Sure. Yep.
Well, Nokia and Xiaomi have signed a business collaboration agreement and a patent agreement, which will give Xiaomi Nokia's patents and give Nokia Xiaomi's network infrastructure equipment. According to the press release on Nokia's site, the two companies agreed to explore opportunities for further cooperation, which could include Internet of Things devices, augmented and virtual reality, and artificial intelligence. Xiaomi has moved into 30 different countries and regions, but it is yet to move out of Asia. Last year, Xiaomi acquired patents from former Nokia phone assets owner Microsoft. So for Xiaomi's sake, here's to hoping they do better with Nokia than Microsoft did.
Yeah, and I mean, Xiaomi really wants to make the U.S. market jump work, and they've not rushed into it. I think partially what we're starting to see over time, at least for Xiaomi's side of this particular story, is that Xiaomi is now collecting more and more patents, which makes you think that they're kind of getting ready to enter into more markets, because I would guess that they would have a pretty good, successful jump if they were to enter the U.S. market. They make really nice devices. They've tested other types of hardware here in the U.S., and I don't know how successful those have necessarily been, how much brand awareness Xiaomi necessarily has. But having all of those patents in their portfolio, it's collateral for their business. And actually, in this case, it's actual, you know, the patents were used as actual collateral. Nokia gets Xiaomi for all of their networking kind of relationships. They're going to further, they're saying that they're going to hope at some point possibly further collaborate on things like AI, AR, VR, Internet of Things. There's a lot of shared interests that they're both really actively working on right now, so they can kind of lift each other up.
Mm-hmm. Because I mean, like, often the Xiaomi products, like the Mi Band or something, looks just like a Fitbit, or like mm-hmm. the Xiaomi laptop looks just like a MacBook, you know? So it's like the patents will keep them out of the legal trouble that they could get into by creating all of these products that look just like the products we already know and love.
Hopefully for Xiaomi, that's the case. Ticketmaster teamed up with a company called Listener that produces ultrasonic sound technology to emit and detect smart tones for transmitting data between devices. This will allow show attendees, people going to these shows, to gain entrance to venues by the simple emission of a largely inaudible tone from the person's phone upon entry. So very low friction, essentially, and great tracking on Ticketmaster's part. Could also allow, like I said, Ticketmaster to track users throughout the venue and send customized messages potentially based on where they are. Maybe something like, get back to your seat, the show's about to begin, or something along those lines. Rollout of the hardware required to do this has already begun at certain venues. And when I read this at first, I was like, I mean, so first, it reminds me of something that Chromecast has had for a while now, guest mode, where essentially if you want to bypass the Wi-Fi network that a Chromecast is connected to, you can do this guest mode thing where it will beam a largely inaudible tone from the Chromecast to the phone when it's in the right mode, and it'll pair that phone so that if you have a friend over and they want to cast some music or whatever, it's very easy to, for them to pair to it without jumping onto your Wi-Fi. So there's that. And I just wondered like why they would want to do this instead of doing something like QR code or RFID, which your NFC, actually NFC is another, like there are other technologies and this just, I don't know, just kind of caught my eye that they would go this approach.
That is like, I hadn't thought about that. Like obviously it's better than paper. You know, it might, I mean, I think that a QR code or NFC, well, they would still have to scan it, right?
Yeah, there would still be the scanning. And I don't, and I also wonder if this, well, a little bit of what I understand about this is that they would also have hardware throughout the venue that could, like, essentially, I'm imagining that they're beaming these sounds back and forth, which sounds like a noisy environment. I don't know how their hardware is capable of tracking that many people at once. But that's what it would have to be doing, right? If it's these tones. So it's just an interesting partnership.
Well, you think noisy like for machines, but they're inaudible for like.
They're inaudible, but how? Yeah, I guess I need to understand because essentially the audio tones that are happening, they're between 18.75 kilohertz and 19.2 kilohertz, which is within human listening range, but it's at the very top of it. And something like 80 to 90% of people can't actually hear that because they're hearing, either they never could hear that or their hearing has deteriorated. And oftentimes those higher frequencies end up going first. So they're outside of that audible hearing range for most people. I just wonder if you have tens of thousands of people in the same place, how their system is able to pick apart all of those tones at the same time.
It just
seems so, I mean, it's fascinating to me that they're saying that they could pull that off, but apparently they could.
Right. I mean, I think that the Jaguars are already using this, they said. So it's used it to like maybe replacing your key fob with your phone, like being able to, you know, transmit this sound into your car in the same way. If you thought that kids today didn't still have interesting ways to mess with their parents, my 12-year-old twins have discovered they've downloaded these apps from the internet that have sounds that like they can hear and we can't hear because we're old and they're young. So that's like I recently found all these apps and I was like, what is that? And like I played it and they were like, whoa. And so yeah.
And so they jumped and you couldn't hear a single note.
Yeah. Like I mean there are some that are really loud because like it's just an app that lies and says that it's this audible tone. But yeah.
Because they want kids to do it in the classroom thinking they're getting away with something and then they get in trouble.
So if you're a young child out there trying to mess with old people who can't hear some sounds anymore. Go for it. Don't say I didn't teach you anything. And speaking of teenagers, if you are a teen or if you know any teens that you've probably noticed how live group video chat is the next big thing. Now, have you been able to do group video chats on Facebook Messenger and Slack since late last year? But everyone knows no teenagers use Facebook Messenger or Slack. The Verge reports that Facebook is now creating a separate standalone group video chat app called Bonfire. It's aimed at teenagers who currently use an app called House Party. House Party was created by the same people who made Meerkat. That was that first live streaming app that was quickly overtaken by Twitter on Periscope. So that company's probably pretty sick of big monoliths like Twitter and Facebook stealing their ideas. And yet it appears that it's going to happen again.
Wow. I know, totally. When I read this, I mean, I felt bad for the Meerkat House Party team because it's like every step of the way they come out with something, they're a little bit ahead of the curve. And then, a big company like Facebook comes along and says, that's a great idea. I think we'll do that too. And the challenge there, I mean, basically what this shows is just the difficult position that modern social media networks have. I mean, having any sort of infiltration. Snapchat has done a good job of that, but even Snapchat is having challenges kind of keeping themselves differentiated and retaining users to a certain degree because these larger companies like Facebook and Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, just come along and do it. And just out of the sheer user base that they have to launch this new feature, not a total service, but a feature of their existing service, they just drown it out. And this kind of news, they've got to be sick of hearing this in the Meerkat house.
What doesn't make sense to me is why they would create a standalone app because they have had a really bad history with standalone apps. And I don't know why they wouldn't just make this part of Instagram. Like it doesn't, I mean, that's where a lot of kids use Instagram to live stream now and to do the Snapchat filters. And I mean, that's their inroads to the teens. And so why not? I feel like there must be a good reason that they're infringing on some sort of patents of some kind. I don't know. But
yeah, well, I mean, so would video chat, like multi-person video chat, fit into the Instagram app based on what Instagram has been? Like, it feels a little different from that. Maybe it would fit into Messenger, but yeah, I mean, on one hand, Facebook's done a lot of like standalone apps and it hasn't worked. But on another hand, it actually kind of has. Messenger totally works on its own. And that was, I think, mocked in the beginning. It was like, why would you ever take that out of Facebook? And mind you, now it's like a full-on standalone messaging app and seems to be doing okay. Instagram, yeah, I don't know. Maybe this is just Facebook's video chat arm, you know, kind of like Hangouts video, but we all know the mess of Hangouts on Google's side, and that's kind of following a similar strategy.
Right. Well, if you haven't caught up on Silicon Valley, HBO's Silicon Valley, and you want to, I'm about to give a spoiler, so hands over ears. I warned you. Jason's going to. This is exactly a Silicon Valley episode. Like, they pivot to group video chat, and then they get in trouble because they have all these teenagers on there, or not teenagers, like under 13 people that don't sign. And that, I think that's probably, that might be the problem, the actual problem that Facebook is dealing with now, because younger kids want to use this. And, you know, they you know, yeah, you can violate all kinds of laws if they're getting in there without, you know, their parents' permission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
So if you want to tell me never to talk about HBO Silicon Valley again because you want to catch up and eventually you will, I apologize. And you can send me your thoughts about that at tnt@twit.tv. And you can send your thoughts about any of the stories we discuss. And of course, you can subscribe to Text News Today by going to our show page at twit.tv/TNT. And after the break, we will talk to TechCrunch senior writer Katie Roof about the recent spate of reports of sexual harassment in Silicon Valley. But first, let's take a minute to thank Grasshopper, the sponsor of this episode. Grasshopper is a virtual phone system designed for entrepreneurs. Grasshopper works just like a traditional phone system, but it requires no hardware purchase. You heard me, no hardware purchase. With their iOS and Android app, callers can reach you wherever you are, just right there on your mobile phone, your Android phone, your iPhone, whatever you use. Your Windows phone, even. Grasshopper allows you to keep your existing number so you can maintain your brand. When you make a call, your client will see your Grasshopper caller ID instead of your personal phone number. All you have to do is select a toll-free or a local number, record a custom greeting, and then add multiple extensions for your business. Toll-free numbers are a really great way for marketing. And if you're just starting out, it's the first step to a professional sounding and looking business. You can set up department and employee extensions with custom call forwarding to any phone in the world, no matter where your employees are. Get voicemails emailed to you as audio attachments. You can also send and receive SMS text messages from your business number. So join the over 250,000 Grasshopper customers today. Plans start at just $12 a month. You have a 30-day money-back guarantee. Turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That's trygrasshopper.com/twit. And we thank Grasshopper for their support.
All right. So over the past few weeks, some key members of the Silicon Valley venture capital world have been outed in the press for sexual harassment. Some stories have hit, and predatory behaviors with women founders. And it certainly seems to be the tip of the iceberg. We're hearing more and more about this seemingly every day. Joining us to talk about this is Katie Roof, senior writer and video host at TechCrunch. Welcome, Katie.
Good to be with you.
It's great to have you back. First of all, this snowball, obviously, it's getting larger and larger by the day. You discussed the situation surrounding Justin Kaldbeck from Binary Capital on last week's Venture podcast. I believe you recorded that on Friday on TechCrunch. Explain a little bit about, first, what led Kaldbeck to resign from his post at Binary Capital and kind of what caused that?
Sure. The information reported that six women were able to come forward, three on the record, publicly disclosing their names, that Justin Kaldbeck had behaved allegedly inappropriately in a number of situations that should have been work-related. And I think what was particularly offensive to a lot of people in the venture community here is that there were situations with founders that he met with where he basically pressured them, what it sounds like, for sex. And that's unfortunate and very frustrating for a lot of women who are founders who are trying to raise money. And so it led to a series of people coming forward about him. And then it actually led to Binary Capital even shutting down.
Yeah, and I mean, that's obviously that's not the only example of this. We also heard last week about Dave McClure from 500 Startups. Do you happen to have an insight on that? I mean, this scenario is very similar to how this happened otherwise with Caldbeck, right?
Sure. Yeah, we're seeing a wave of women who are becoming more comfortable coming forward and sharing things that have happened to them over the years. And Dave McClure was another example of someone who allegedly did a lot of things that made women he worked with or he worked with in the tech community feel uncomfortable. There were some pretty bad allegations against him. And so, yes, ultimately he lost his job as well. And so yeah, a lot of people in tech are coming forward, but I think it's important to remember that this is just not just a tech problem. I, like many other women, have faced various situations, unfortunately, over the course of my career, and it hasn't all been tech related. Actually, most of the men have not been in the tech industry. So while we are seeing some very high profile examples of men losing their jobs in tech right now, I think it's because right now we're experiencing a moment here, not just in tech, but you've seen it happen in some other companies as well, and even to Bill Cosby, where we're experiencing a cultural change where women are being believed. I think that women are feeling more comfortable now than ever because they're not feeling like it's going to be my word against theirs. In fact, many of them also have texts to prove situations. But on top of that, we're now in a society where more and more people are accepting that women have been experiencing this kind of harassment over the years and that it shouldn't be accepted and that they're not making this up. And so I think we're going to continue to see a lot more of this. And unfortunately, the venture firms weren't holding themselves accountable, or at least some of the venture firms. I've met many, many venture capitalists who are not terrible people. But the ones that weren't holding people accountable are really, really seeing a lot of fallout from this. And I think things will change.
I think you brought up a good point about the technology changing. Like you said, this happens in all industries. It's been happening forever. We've all watched Mad Men. You know, it's getting better all the time, but we're not there yet. But one thing you mentioned was the text messages to back it up. I mean, how much of that do you think is playing a role in this? It isn't just he said, she said. It's like she said, and here's what he texted as well. Like, how much do you think that is playing a role in what we're seeing now?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I personally haven't come forward specifically because I haven't had text to back it up in certain situations over the years. And I think probably other women feel the same as well. Even still, I think most women probably don't want to see their name in the news as a famous victim. And I think the vast majority of women have not come forward. This is very, very, unfortunately, extremely common. But I do think that that is an added element that a lot of conversations are being virtually recorded. And so it also made it easier for reporters to report on because it wasn't just a he said, she said situation. No one could accuse these people of being upset that they didn't get their startup funded. Instead, they actually had a written record that these are real things that were said.
Yeah. And also, you know, we spoke a couple of months ago about Susan Fowler. She went public with Uber's culture, toxic culture, many would say, a little bit earlier this year. And that has definitely led to kind of a slide for Uber and definitely for Uber's ex-CEO. Did that set the standard and kind of, I don't know, set the stage for raising the collective awareness for what we're encountering right now? Obviously, that's a good thing to raise that awareness, but do you think it started there or did it start elsewhere?
I don't know if it started there, but it certainly helped. I mean, to see what kind of effect that she had on Uber, just writing that blog post and how it led to this huge investigation and ultimately the ouster of Travis and other executives, I think I'm sure it got other women who had been in similar scenarios thinking, should I come forward? Do I have a responsibility to come forward in case other women are experiencing these situations as well? And so that probably did inspire some of these women to come forward. Although I did read that at least one of the women in the Justin Caldbeck situation had been trying to get him in trouble for years, but actually apparently did have trouble convincing people of the story. And I think maybe that element of what happened with Susan Fowler certainly helped contribute to this environment where women are feeling more comfortable and they are getting believed. But I think it's just a broader cultural change that we've seen the past few years where people are starting to take women more seriously, which they should have been doing all along. But the combination of the cultural change and the written records of conversations, and what we're seeing the most is when there are multiple people alleging that they've had a situation with a particular individual, then it's more likely to be taken seriously, because when you have six women coming forward, it's not the same as one situation that could have possibly been misconstrued or taken out of context. You have multiple women who are saying that a certain individual has made them feel uncomfortable in a work setting.
Yeah. And I mean, it's entirely possible that one person would decide to make that up. But really, I mean, no one wants to have, like you said, no one wants to have their name in there. So it's, you know, less likely that that many people would want to possibly ruin their careers and their lives, by, you know, saying something that isn't true. So when we talk about Uber, in the case of Uber was they had a toxic culture and they had an ineffective human resources department. And so, these VCs, I mean, they're not the people that the women founders that they're talking to are not part of their company. They're not under their HR roof. And they're in this very awkward position of trying to ask off, you know, a male founder for money. And it's the way it is awkward. Like, I don't pretend to understand that world. I mean, you report on it. So what would you say? I mean, how do we change this? I know that TechCrunch came out today with like a template for how to deal with this, because you're not dealing with like everyone under one company. It's just a weird kind of power balance. Like, can you talk a little bit about this investor founder sexual harassment policy template?
Sure, absolutely. There was a template posted today on TechCrunch, which shows the input of various people in the industry, founders, VCs, some of the people that came forward in the new situations we were just discussing. And they talked about having an explicit policy at these venture firms for how you deal with founders, because unfortunately, it used to be an all-male world. And now that we're introducing different people into the mix, which is great, we're now getting into these dicey situations. And so while major companies have sexual harassment policies, venture capital firms often don't, because they're small teams of people that don't necessarily have HR, or usually don't. And so there needs to be a formal policy put in place, because the VC founder meeting, I feel like it's akin to being hit on if you're going in for a job interview. Totally inappropriate to be hit on at a meeting when you're trying to raise funding as a founder. If you're so passionate about your startup and you go to this meeting and you're so excited to pitch an investor, and it turns out they either give you the impression that there's some other inappropriate obstacle to get this funding, or that they were never serious about funding your company and they just wanted to date you, that's terrible and it shouldn't be happening. And I think more venture capitalists are starting to recognize that they need to spell this out. It should be obvious that that's not okay to do, but it's apparently not. And so not only was it not obvious, apparently, to some people, they probably didn't realize what the consequences would be. They probably didn't realize that they would lose their jobs, certainly not in this public way. And so they think there needs to be clarity going forward about what is and isn't appropriate. As a woman, I've personally found over the years that you have men in various industries who can get drinks with each other, and it's totally normal and actually part of advancing in certain industries that revolve around networking. But sometimes when a woman gets a drink with a man, sometimes I've had situations where the man was inappropriate to me. And so I think you need to have clarity. Like, is this a meeting? Is this a date? Because unfortunately, those lines are not clear enough to some people. And we're getting into these very unfortunate situations.
Absolutely. I mean, that is true. It's the same with mentoring. I mean, they're, you know, with men that are, you know, mostly in CEO roles, it's very hard for a woman to find a mentor. And So here's another thing that I want to ask you about that I haven't seen a lot of, but I've been thinking about. Of course, there are lots of bad eggs here, people who are sexually assaulting, sexually harassing women. But it is also a culture problem, not just at Uber, but, you know, in Silicon Valley and in tech. And I'm wondering if you have thought what you think about this. I feel like this is also a problem for men, like, because I think there are situations where a group of men, it's like, hey, let's all go, you know, to the strip bar, like to the strip club. And there are some men that are not comfortable with that. Or let's all go out for drinks, or let's have this conversation. And so what do you think about that? Do you think that this culture is also hard for men that can't speak up and say, like, I'm not comfortable with that, because they might not get the funding or they might lose their jobs?
Absolutely. I think there are certain work environments, particularly in male-dominated industries where there aren't enough high-ranking women, where there is this pressure to be a man. I hate to say it, but that's the stereotype. I'm not saying they should act that way, but that's how they are acting, it appears, and I've seen it before. And I don't think it's fair for any man or woman to experience these kinds of pressures. And I think that there should be more accountability at both startups and venture capital teams that are, they may be smaller teams and may not have formal HR in place, but they probably should have policies that are similar to that at larger companies.
Yeah. So my final question on this topic is around kind of the velocity of these reports and the change that comes from this, because I mean, we're talking about it a lot. It's a topic that's front and center right now, and that's because there has been just this rapid succession of stories, and not to mention a very swift response in pretty much all cases. We thought that the Uber Kalanick fallout was fast, and then Caldbeck happened, and I mean, it was within days, you know, that entire VC fund was turned upside down. So there's all of this change happening so quickly. Do you think this is a sign of good things to come? Is this, I mean, obviously it's good that people are talking about it, but does this give you hope for kind of the future in Silicon Valley?
Look, I don't take any joy in seeing these people fall from their from where they were. And, you know, there's some very successful names mentioned that had careers going for them, and it's sad for me to see. Right. But at the same time, I do think this needs to happen, because unfortunately, these issues have been going on for too long and somehow they weren't being addressed. And I guess what it's taken is if these venture teams aren't holding their people accountable, then the public is holding them accountable. The media is holding them accountable. And I hope that we don't have to continue down that path. I hope that these things are more quietly addressed and that people are able to handle these situations more quietly. But I do think in the coming weeks, we are going to hear about more and more situations. You know, as reporters, we have been hearing about various situations, which we've reported on. And I think that it's going to be a difficult few weeks or even few months for the venture capital industry. But the key is to learn from this and make better decisions going forward and have I really agree with what was written on TechCrunch today about having formal policies so that there's no gray area about what is and what isn't appropriate, how to act at work meetings, especially when you have power over the situation or power over a person's career. And this isn't just the VC founder situation. This goes for, you know, women who are working at venture firms, or whether they're other venture partners, which there aren't very many female venture partners, which I think is part of the problem, but or their associates or their secretaries. I just believe in general, if a man has power over a woman's career, that he should not be hitting on the woman. I think it's terrible, and it puts unnecessary pressure on a woman that puts them in an uncomfortable situation. And it's part of the reason, one of many reasons, that some women have faced challenges in moving up the career ladder. I think that this is not just about sexual harassment, though, when women face trouble moving up in the workforce. I think there's a lot of sexism that is a little more understated. I see a lot of men, including tech men in tech, who are very condescending to women in a way that they wouldn't be with a man with the same experience, the same knowledge, the same qualifications. And so I think actually sometimes it's the unconscious forms of sexism that are just as damaging, if not more. And so I think it's important to now be aware, or to always be aware, of all forms of sexism, because in all sorts of forms of discrimination. As you mentioned earlier, it's not just women who've experienced some of these challenges, but also men. It could be any sort of dynamic, but people shouldn't be, people should be treated equally. We should be equals. If we're in the workforce, we should be treated on the same level as everyone else. So I just hope that we can find a better path going forward.
Absolutely agree on all accounts.
Thank you.
Thank you. Katie Roof, of course, TechCrunch Venture Podcast. Fantastic show, by the way. So definitely go to TechCrunch.com.
Equity.
Sorry. I apologize.
Thank you. There's two podcast now.
No. I got that wrong earlier, too. It is the Equity Podcast on the Venture site. Got it.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Equity Podcast, TechCrunch.com. Katie, thank you, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye.
We got some feedback, too, from Mattia Schultz. Writes about our discussion a few weeks ago about Google no longer scanning our email to send us targeted ads. I suggested maybe this is the first sign that Gmail will no longer be free in the future. Mattia says, I don't think that this is the first step towards making Gmail a paid service, since Google can still collect important information from Gmail other than using it for personalized ads. Plus, it's still a gateway to their other products. Gmail is used more for more than generating ad revenue. It is now a very important source of information for Google now. It's also an important portal to Google's other services, such as its calendar, productivity apps, and music. Google never said these sites would not be used for personalized ads.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, Gmail feeds a lot of things, and not just for serving ads. So, very good point. TNT's fan of the day is Drew Lewis, who sent us this photo saying this is, quote, what I do when there's no TNT. Apparently opens up a bottle of wine and watches a bicycle race. I should know what race this is, but I do not. So I apologize, but I'm sure it's amazing. I've just never. Have you ever watched a bicycle?
That's actually me just biking down the street.
Wow. You've got the paparazzi live streaming to TV. That's impressive.
Bleak says it's the Tour de France. But
thank you. That probably would make a whole lot of sense, Bleak. No, where did it say it?
Oh, right there.
Up at the very top. It was really small. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Or just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup, post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag how I watch TNT and we'll find it. Thanks to Bleak for keeping us honest.
And I might remind you that Jason has had jury duty. We're not going to talk about what jury he's on because he hasn't told me, because he knows that I can't keep a secret. But he has been doing that all morning and then coming here to do this show. So...
Yeah, that's my excuse. That right there. Thank you, Megan.
And he can't even come here in his flying car because he'd get here a lot faster if he could, because we do have some flying car news. According to the South China Morning Post, Volvo's parent company has bought the flying car startup Terrafugia, which was founded by MIT aerospace engineers and MBA students. Geely, the company that owns Volvo, Lotus, and Proton, has now acquired the 11-year-old U.S. flying car designer that is designing a passenger vehicle that flies like an airplane in the air and drives like a car on the ground. Geely also announced that its cars that drive on the road will all go electric by 2019. That's the Volvos, anyway, will all be electric by 2019. And I hope I am pronouncing Geely right.
Isn't that a Ben Affleck romantic comedy? Geely.
Geely.
Something
this
like
is
that.
G-E-E-L-Y, not G-I-G-L-I.
Okay, fine.
But so, I don't know. I looked on howtopronounce.com and it said Geely.
That sounds about right. I mean, that would have been my guess, but who the heck knows? I'm getting everything wrong today. So this is the prototype or concept from a few years ago.
Oh, it's not a real flying car.
If you go down, I think it's a little bit further in that article, there is actual video, or maybe it's a different article that I ended up finding. I found actual video. I'll see if I can find it. But so that was the prototype from a few years ago where the wings kind of folded in to the actual body, a little bit more elegant than what it ended up being at this point, which is like wings that just kind of fold up and then out. But no matter how you slice it, good sign for vertical takeoff landing, VTOL. This is like one of the more elegant versions of that. It's highway speed capable, and it has a full vehicle parachute for coming down. So, you know, if you see that car floating down in a parachute, you know it's one of these.
I think probably by the end of your jury duty, we'll have this car will come to market and you'll be able to just parachute into the studio.
Maybe we can get one for review. I'd be all over that review, by the way. And let's see here. If you are interested, supposedly estimated price, $279,000 expected to release within 3 years. And you just have to drop a $10,000 deposit to reserve a place in line.
Let's do it.
Okay. We'll pool our money together all here at Twit, and then every other day we'll alternate who gets to fly it. That'll totally happen. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
And find us at the TNT subreddit. That's technewstoday.reddit.com. Find all the ways that you can subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tell me how to pronounce Geely, tweet at me. I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Brian. But you're not editing, right? Okay, I'll just ask you every day. Are you editing?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Not today.
That means Kevin's editing. So thank you, Kevin, for being awesome. Thanks to John for hopping in Burke's place. That's John's foot, just so you know his foot exists.
Both feet.
And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.